Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome Dr. John Harrison. Hi, John.
Hello, Mike. Good seeing you, buddy.
Great seeing you, too. How's the weather in the cold Michigan nowadays?
We're going to have a melt this week, and I don't think we'll be seeing any daisies. So I'm going to take off again tomorrow and going on a real estate cruise for to get some more warm weather and to get some education as well.
That sounds great. I haven't been one of those cruises yet, but I'm sure it's delightful mixing up real estate education with some fun.
Yes.
So, John, again, thank you for coming on the podcast. And we've known each other for a number of years, and we were great friends. We've been the Freedom Founders for a while, and Freedom Founders helps folks become free for life. And you are a free for life member of the organization, and you were a successful dentist for many years, and then you graduated from dentistry into financial world of financial freedom. Could you talk a little bit about that? What did it take you to move from being a dentist to a financially savvy investor and financially free person?
Well, I can tell you that you were one of the first people that I actually met in this area when I went to Freedom Founders the first time. And I had not, even though I thought I had hired good people in the arena of stocks and bonds, that hadn't worked out for me. And I just figured I needed to take care of things myself. So I was searching. And when I went to Freedom Founders and I heard you speak, Mike, and obviously David and Walter Wofford was there, and so on. Your knowledge was so far beyond what I knew, and that bothered me. It was like, you know, I need to know this, because I, just like yourself, we're consummate learners, and I could see the integrity that was in the room amongst people helping people and sharing ideas, and you just don't see people being that open like we did there. So that started really my relationship with you, just understanding how intelligent you are, how I like the way that you analyze the markets and have more of a global view of things as well. So that started me off, and to be honest with you, I've never stopped since. It's been I continue to learn each and every day. And it's worked out quite well for me financially as well.
So, John, thank you for the kind word. I greatly appreciate the credits you've given me, and I take very little. I think you are a very steward learner. You spend years of financial educating yourself, and that's made the difference. Right. And a great mastermind can also help quite a bit. And from what I heard from you, going from being a dentist to being a financially free, well-educated person takes a couple of things. And again, I was reading between the lines. And one is path of continuous learning. Two, joining a group that will help you accelerate, like Freedom Founders. And three, you've actually been making investments. And as you make investments, you learn. I like to ask people the question, and you tell me what's been your experience. Are you investing to learn, or are you learning to invest? And it's always a little bit of both, right? Most people don't realize what the question is. And the question is, are you preparing to lose the money to get education, or are you actually trying to get a good return while you're learning, or both? And what's been your experience with your investments? Has it been mostly getting good return and learning on the way? Have you had some bumps in the road? Just curious, what are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, I can tell you that I had more bumps in the road before I found Freedom Founders and that mastermind, because even though I was going out in and seeking education from good people, but still the people weren't vetted, and I didn't have the depth of knowledge. But since I've been with Freedom Founders, have there been some bumps in the road? Yeah, but I never lost any of my principle, and I've always had a good positive gain. Some of those things I've learned with. The biggest thing that I think that I've learned, Mike, is and continue to. John Groom, at our first meeting, I said, I did my due diligence on this. And he goes, son, you don't even know what due diligence is. And he was exactly right. Due diligence is something that we learn on each and every investment that we make. And, some more than others. But, I look at the depth of some of the research, and I'll use you as an example. Again, some of the research that you do. And then I look at David and how he's brought you together with another smart fellow in Fuquan, and you were able to look over that and even help Fuquan learn due diligence, even though he's a strong operator. So, I would, in coming full circle on this, the biggest thing that I've gotten is I've gotten a level of due diligence that is greater than I had before, and I've had good, solid returns and learned along the way. Some of them, didn't work out quite that way, but we had a plan B, another exit strategy, so that when we got out of it, we got out of it clean.
Yeah, I appreciate your thoughts on the subject. And again, what you are conveying to folks is that in the investment world, is a dynamic world. And as you go through the learning experience, you're learning how to do better due diligence. I do that every day too. We make mistakes too. Every day, I try to figure out what I need to do better. And this is part of life. You don't always make perfect decisions, and you often learn more from mistakes than you learn from successes. But from what I heard from you, you've made diversified investments, and you've had a portfolio that was able to withstand bumps here and there, and overall have done really well. But let me ask you this question. So the key question now that you've achieved financial freedom, how do you define mathematically, economically, financial freedom? And I'm going to throw a formula and pretty similar to what Freedom Founders teaches, and maybe you have your own definition, but I'd love to hear your opinion. So normally financial freedom means, this is back to almost classic example of Robert Kiyosaki, where your passive cash flow equals to your expenses. So you're able to generate enough income from your portfolio to pay for your lifestyle. Is that generally the your thoughts, or it goes beyond that?
It goes beyond that in that I was raised to have a cushion. When I went to college, my mom gave me $1,000 and said, this is your emergency fund. And I was in college for 9 years. I never touched that money. I liked that cushion. So Mike, in answer to your question, I always, when I'm looking at what, my monthly cash flow needs are, or my yearly or whatever that is, I bump it by 15%. I like to have that there. I'm not riding on that. The other thing that I look at too is I have a reserve fund. And my reserve fund is a year's worth of my expenses that I keep aside. And I happen to keep that in a life insurance policy that I have access to borrow from, but it gains 5% while it sits there. So it's not sitting dead in a bank account. But I like to have cushions set up for myself along the way, so I'm not always riding on the edge.
John, you just had two great points to share with the audience, and I'm going to recap them, and I very much appreciate your teaching here. So number one lesson is have the reserves. So you should certainly have a good amount of reserves. 1 year is a good number. If you follow what Warren Buffett wrote to sort of his thoughts on inheritance to his wife, and I think the point was to have a couple of years of expenses in cash. But the second lesson, which is even more important, is not have the money in cash. but have the money in a infinite banking type of product, like a whole life insurance, where it's earning you the return typically very safely. And two, you have access to the money. So it's a brilliant concept, the whole life insurance. It's from the good old days of Rockefellers. They've been using life insurance products for generations. And that's sort of the lesson number two. Don't keep the cash in cash, but keep the cash in a good cash value whole life policy that gives you access to cash. So I appreciate those thoughts. So let's keep kind of scrolling forward. One of the key areas of education, Freedom Founders, and you've made a lot of investments in that area too, has been real estate. So what do you like about real estate investing? And I'm talking about individual deals. I'm talking about real estate funds, just the whole sector. Why real estate? Why not stock market? Has the real estate made a big difference in accelerating the growth of your investment capital, the financial freedom versus stock market per se?
Well, it's a world of difference. One is control. You know, when my money was sitting in the stock market, and again, I was with 1,500 other dentists, we had over $2 billion. You can get some pretty good money managers when they're managing $2 billion, and they lost a third of all my assets in 2008. Now, let's transpire what occurred after that. I went out and I looked for other products, and this is while I was looking for Freedom Founders and hadn't been there yet. I am still tied up in REITs, and yeah, that's real estate, but it's tied up in these REITs, and I don't have access to it. I don't have control of it, so it isn't just real estate. It's real estate and having it in the proper way where, hey, I have investments, but they're actually backed by something that's sound. And it could be real estate. It could be some businesses also that are sound assets that I have as well. And, you know, I've invested in real estate in many, many different ways. Like you said, I love funds because of the diversification of it, but I also love owning a physical property that gives me continuous cash flow and that I can take advantage of depreciation. So, you know, there's a big picture that comes out here, and you have access to that through real estate, whether it's some of the tax advantages of it, if it's the fact that real estate appreciates and you don't get taxed on that appreciation until you sell that product. And even if you do, you can do things called a 1031 exchange. You know, there are so many tools that you learn that allow you to control your taxes, keep more of your money. And I found that through real estate as well. Just a lot more. I feel like I have a lot more control over what my financial growth is going to be, and having that cash flow being there each and every month now that I'm not a W-2 earner.
Yeah, that's another great share. You're so right that the real estate investments give you better control and better predictability over your investments, and obviously tax benefits. It's the best asset class from a tax advantage perspective. It's the depreciation, it's the appreciation, it's the amortization, all those combination of all those things plus the cash flow and the predictability of the cash flow. So yeah, I think you've certainly made a great switch. Now let's talk a little bit about what we've done recently, you and I. So I'm a fund manager of Tampa Opportunity Fund, and that's just for the audience. This is a great educational example how elite folks like you can take a next step up. So you can create arbitrage with other people's money. In other words, this is a very powerful idea. There are funds out there, and today I'm thinking about this problem all the time, how to get into the best units of a given fund. Right, it's always a question. You see funds, and then they'll have A, B, and C units. Sometimes different classes, but conceptually, there are best units, kind of second best and third best units. How do you get the best units of the funds? And you did it. You put together a mini kind of a feeder fund, a mini syndication, where you get many members of Freedom Founders folks who join their forces, and by having strength in numbers, bigger dollar amount, you get into the best units of the fund, and you as the manager get to enjoy a little bit of management fees for putting it together. But the value that you're creating for your investors is greater than the fees that you're collecting. So in fact, everybody wins. They get into better units, they get best returns. You get a little bit of arbitrage, and we get more capital invested in the fund. Could you talk just a little bit about that and how you came up with it and how you did it? Just a couple of words on the subject, on the thoughts of, let's just call it arbitrage.
Okay. Well, I'll speak to this in two different ways. One of the things that I do at Freedom Founders in my position now is I've now been at this 5 years, and as you've alluded to, I've been pretty successful at it. And so when people are coming to me and they're just starting to learn, they want to know, well, where can I initially put my money? Well, there's a learning curve to this and looking and saying, what are the things that you like to invest in? What's your wheelhouse? And until you know that, where can I put my money safely in the meantime? And so that's why I like funds. And one of the you didn't bring me on this to keep patting you on the back, but one of the things that I love about your fund and you, Mike, is that when you invest in any given asset, you are always looking at different exit strategies out of that and the security of what that asset is that we're investing in. I love that. So for me to be able to go in and take a group of people and take their money and say, here, listen, we're going to pool this money so that we can get a better return and get A shares, I feel very confident in doing that in your fund. So the arbitrage in that is that for trying to what we call herd cats. Whenever you're trying to take a number of people and get them to do something, it is not easy. You have to chase people up and down and around and do this, and you should be remunerated for those efforts. And so, yeah, you get that. But also, guess what happened to me? I got in A shares. So that worked out for me as well. The split that occurs as one investor unit comes in is great. And plus, I like being able to give you that money and that amount because it's easier for you to go out and find assets when you have that type of capital to work with, as opposed to smaller amounts that come in where you have to group it together in order to get that asset. So it creates a win-win. That's the nature of that.
John, thank you for clarification. I love your point. Number one, you're helping folks who don't have enough experience to get into this best investment class and investment vehicle, best units, and they're not ready to do it themselves. So it's kind of a win-win every way you look at it. And what's interesting, I have a meeting later this week with another operator, and they're launching their fund too. And I'm working out the best class of units with them to be able to make it available to Freedom Founders, our fund, and kind of our community. And the only way to do it is by pulling forces together. To a fund manager, there's a lot of advantage of having a large amount of capital coming in a single transaction rather than having a lot of individual folks to deal with. So from that perspective, this is a lot of help. And from the investment selection perspective, we've had a lot of discussions on these investment quadrants, kind of quadrant one, the safest of quadrants with downside protection, and the quadrant two also being investment grade, then sort of the speculative grade being quadrant three and four. Now, this podcast is not to talk about quadrants, but I just wanted kind of to hear your thoughts on the portfolio allocation between investment grade and speculative. So as a fund manager, I try to think that probably 80% of the money, there's not an exact number, 75 to 80% should go into more investment grade type of projects with good downside protection, ideally multiple exit strategies, and a little bit 20 to 25% or less into speculative projects. So what do you think about that? And the other thing I wanted to add, in the context of today's economic environment where we are thinking a little bit about possible recession, do you think the ratio should get a little even more conservative, or this ratio is generally acceptable? What do you think about your own portfolio allocation? Do you like to take a little bit less risk, a little bit more risk? What do you feel?
In all honesty, at any point in time, there can be speculative grade investments that are still good sound investments. And it does not, regardless of what the economic climate, we can have some catastrophic event that happens that maybe you're going to tighten your belt all the way down. But I always look and I understand when I'm making a speculative investment, will I always be doing that? Probably, because that's the nature of who I am. But it is, it's about 10% of my portfolio that I tend to put in that that arena. But I don't think there is a time where I wouldn't look at everything that's out there and even say, are great companies built in down times? Yeah. I mean, it happens. So you have to keep your eyes open for this and not just crawl and sit in a corner, because you're going to miss out on a lot of deals. So, yes, I love investment grade. That's where I make my bread and butter each and every day. But I look and I have enough of a cushion that we discussed before that I might take and put something in some speculation, just because, hey, if that works out, great. If it doesn't, as we were talking even earlier in this podcast, it's a learning experience. What did I miss in looking at this? Did I look at this asset well enough? And if I didn't, what did I learn so that I don't make that mistake going forward?
Yeah, John, a couple of great points again. I like your sharing the 10% number. So it's lower than I thought. I thought it'd be 20, but 10 is a perfectly good number. And it's certainly, we all want to have a little bit of sort of, let's just call them speculative investments in our portfolio, just because, like you said, great companies do operate in down markets too. So I'm completely in agreement. What's interesting too, some of these speculative projects have significant value add or big value add, and that value add creates safety. So the fact that they're speculative doesn't mean they are bad investments. They don't have a cash flow, and these projects need to have enough cash reserves to survive liquidity stress if such thing happens. Many of them, we love to invest in them because they have significant upside. So risk-adjusted return is what we're looking for, not necessarily pure speculative versus investment. Just quick comparison, and we have only a few more minutes left. What do you think about funds versus individual deals? Just from your own experience, is just funds a stepping stone for folks to go into individual deals as they get experience, or funds are generally good vehicles even for experienced folks to take part of because of diversification? And how do you make a choice? At which point do you want to put more money in the funds? At which point do you want to put more money in individual deals? Is there any kind of rule of thumb, or this is all kind of dynamic and flexible?
I happen to really like funds, and there's a number of reasons why I like them. When you're going out and you're doing individual deals, there's more work involved in that. Yeah, you might have some work up front, like maybe I did in the syndication, but once the fund is set up, you know, your money can sit there and continue to gain its return. It can compound as well, you know, and so understanding those principles, I think there's always a position for funds in my portfolio. And it depends on where you're at. Okay, if you're very active in doing short-term lending and continuing to turn that money, you can get higher return, especially with points. But you got a lot of paper you got to turn. You got to find a lot of things, and there's downtime in between there. And you have to look at what is my actual return? Because if there's 30 or 60 days, the opportunity cost of not having that money continuing to work, have you really gotten ahead of something, as opposed to having it sitting in a fund where it's continuously earning this return, and also has the potential for a huge upside when you're dealing with funds like Temple Opportunity Fund? You know your fund is set up differently. There's other funds that's strictly this return. Okay, there's others where, here, listen, we have this potential growth that can happen on the back end over and above the pref. So I think that it's a good stepping stone to start with, but I think it should be part of everybody's portfolio throughout their career in their investing career, as far as I'm concerned.
John, thank you for sharing. That's a great, great share again. I just like the passivity element that you differentiated between a passive investment truly and an active. It makes a big difference. Return on time, not just return on investment, is a huge, huge consideration for everybody, including us. As I manage fund portfolio, one of the key discussions we're having is portfolio management. The bigger the portfolio, the more elements it's got, there's more work managing them. And the same thing happens when you make one fund investment. It's a one investment versus a lot of loans. Managing them in recycling the money's work. So it's a great consideration, and I appreciate your sharing. Any other kind of final thoughts to dentists or anybody else? What would you say they need to do? What's the next step? If they're sitting there, they've been practicing, or any professional, they could be a computer engineer, they could be a different type of a doctor, they could be a CPA, and they're looking to go beyond their primary trade, beyond what they learned in school and what's making them money. Now they want to get financial freedom. What's their best next step? What is one simple thing they can do to get there, or to start going in that direction?
Yes. Well, the main thing that you have to do is you have to educate yourself. And by educating yourself, you have to become a reader. You just do. I don't care if it's on audiobook or whichever way. I recommend Darren Hardy, The Compound Effect. And the reason why I recommend that book is because it talks about, and it actually in the back there's sheets, but you become accountable to yourself and you take things in small steps so that you continuously get momentum. You know, you have to chunk this down into small pieces, because if you just try to jump in the like, you're going to overwhelm yourself and end up back to where you were before. So the key thing is to educate yourself. The second key is to get around a group of like-minded people. And we talk about this in masterminds because, you know, the compound effect of other people and what they've read and the ideas and experiences that they can share is huge for you to be able to talk with one another, and you're not having to recreate every wheel. You know, if they went down that road, it's very helpful. I have a group of we sit in a room of 100 people, but I also have groups of 2 and 5 that I sit and I talk with as well. And it's been a huge for me. So main thing is, you know, get your knowledge base up, get your toe in the water, invest in a fund so that your money just isn't sitting there dead. Having dead equity is terrible. The opportunity cost of that, you just have to look at that and just say, how much have I lost just by sitting here and doing this? Yes, it's important to educate yourself, but get your money invested in a fund, have it growing within there while you're getting your education and seeking out the people that you're going to learn from. I think that's just, and once you see this, I'll explain it like a mushroom cloud. I mean, this thing starts off and it's got this little stem and you're just kind of growing, and then all of a sudden it starts to compound and you see and you go, oh my God, I can't believe this. When you make your first investment off the interest that you earned from your investment, that is a cool day. And that'll create even more momentum for you.
Yeah, it's the big momentum. Gaining it hard, but once you get it, you can't stop.
So, that's right.
Thank you for sharing, John. It's been great. Your wisdom is much appreciated. If folks wanted to reach out to you, is there a good way to, is there a website? Is there, you're obviously involved with Freedom Founders. Folks should definitely check out Freedom Founders. But is there another way folks could reach out to you? Maybe they want some of your personal coaching or something like that.
Yeah, the best way is just because it filters for me and it's easy for people to remember, just send an email to me at john@freedomfounders.com. Very easy to remember. It's just john@freedomfounders.com. And I can go through there and just reference Big Mike in it so that I know what the source was as well and can get back to you.
John, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom, and I'll see you soon at the next Freedom Founders event, and we'll speak soon.
Okay, sounds good, Mike. Have a great day.
You too, and enjoy your cruise.
Oh, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.